one. No, that was good. That one was good.
All right, let's use that one.
The first one, no, yeah.
First one's in the bag.
No. I meant like the countdown. The first countdown I can't use. It doesn't seem like it's going to line up.
Okay. But after that, we're good.
Starting now.
This is the second one.
No. It's still the first one.
Oh, I disagree.
Hello and welcome to episode 270 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver.
Vancouver, Canada. Adam, how are things in Vancouver?
Excellent, thank you.
Even without me?
Still good. They're still good.
Okay. Not the answer I was hoping for. I'm not going to lie to you. I was hoping, there's a little something missing, as the French say, a certain I don't know what.
Do you secretly hope that your baseball team gets crushed if you're out of the lineup?
No, we get crushed either way. Yeah.
Okay, then.
No, but whenever anybody else on the team hits a home run, I just pout and scream and say, you're cheating. That's what I do.
Right.
Because it's me or the highway, man.
I gotcha.
We don't say that. We don't say my way or the highway. We say mein Weg oder das Autobahn.
Right.
Which doesn't roll off the tongue quite as...
not the same.
Not as well. So there's that. Man, is it cold there like it is here?
Nope. Spring.
When I say cold, I mean zero.
No, it's not that.
So it's not like minus 20 like I think it is in parts of Ontario or something.
No. But, it's quite comfortable here.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Really proud of you.
Yeah.
Amazon.
Right.
I've bought nothing. You?
Nope.
Okay. Well, if you're unlike us and you're going to buy things on Amazon, hey, click through our site.
Uh-huh.
I know some people were having issues with the banners, which are still up, but I did put a regular link on our Amazon page to the U.S. site. So if you're looking to click through, that should make it a lot easier. So go to our homepage and you'll see the Amazon link to our Amazon page, and right there you'll see a link to the U.S. page.
Gotcha.
My tip for you, though, and I'm 99% sure this works. I hope so, because that's what I do. Is I go ahead, click on that, go through our page, click on Amazon, and when it goes through, I then bookmark that site. Because every time I click on that bookmark, it just automatically goes through our site.
Right.
So I think, anyways.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
Yeah. It says so in the browser, in the whatever the top of the browser is. They must have terms for that. I don't know it.
Me either.
When you enter your website you go to, what's that called?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay. The something window.
This is very confusing.
I can't believe we have a show. This isn't right. The barrier to entry of podcasts is pretty low. Let's be honest. Baseball's going again.
Right.
As you alluded to, but guys are flying in. And we'll start going outside now, which is delightful, playing baseball in the zero. That's no fun.
No.
It's no fun raking the field when it's frozen.
You have batting mitts.
I don't wear them normally. I might have to. I might have to wear my batting mittens.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No.
You don't want that. Okay. Photo challenge.
Yes.
Did you shoot anything interesting? If you did, let's talk about it next week.
Okay. I didn't, so that there's a cliffhanger for you.
We'll try to make something up for next week's show.
All right, I'll make up something.
this week's photo challenge was square.
Yeah.
Why square?
Because you said, let's
do it. Because I did say it out loud.
Yeah,
I said it
out loud. You said, why square? And in my head, I was asking myself that, but you said it, so I did it.
Do you ever shoot, purposely shoot square?
Not really.
No, me neither, and I should. And we will talk about this in the distant future, not in the near future.
Great.
There's a tease for you.
Yeah.
In like 4 to 6 weeks, we'll do an episode on why square, why it's hip to be square.
I'm gonna get a calendar started, and I'm gonna start using big red magic marker to X off every day between now and then.
Yeah. That's on you.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so square. So let's have a look at your photo here. That is that's a square image.
That is. It's a lemon. Yeah.
Why a lemon? Why'd you shoot the lemon? Take us to what's going on here?
There's a lemon on the counter.
It doesn't look fresh cut to me.
Nope. I took it out of my sister-in-law's fridge. I was at her house, and I said, I'm going to make a square image. And my first thought was, I want something round on square. That seemed to make sense to me in my head. In my visual imagination, my instinct was something round will kind of, I think, be pleasing with a square crop or square background. So I looked in her fridge and saw a lemon, and I thought, perfect. It's got some color. I'm really going to sort of work on bringing out the color, and the round will be as a nice contrast. You know, we talk about black and white, it's and sort of what makes an interesting black and white is high contrast. Well, I thought round on square makes for, again, a similar kind of contrast.
I agree.
So there you go. So that's all I was thinking. And then this was the counter in my sister-in-law's house. It's actually just a white countertop, but I wanted it to appear silver. So just kind of did use lights to light this. I have two flashes, both bare, one right at the lemon kind of on along the counter, and then one bouncing up underneath the countertop behind it. And so I had to just play with exposure. They're both really low power, like absolute low power on my flashes, which is like 1/128th power. And then just kind of played around with my composition, and the end. That's all there is here.
85 mil.
Believe so, yes.
You're going to make me check?
No, you don't have to check. It's 85 mil.
Yeah, I'm checking.
Okay, go ahead.
It says 70 to 200.
No way.
No, it says 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
Yeah. So that's all that's going on here. And the beauty of this photo is, in terms of simplicity, is that this is no cranking vibrance or saturation. This is out of camera. So this is the yellow. This is how it appeared right on the back of my LCD. This is how it appeared when I uploaded it. This is not trickery. This is just the color contrast with lighting.
I like the walk away photo.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
Really, I'm a fan. But do you ever get to the point, or did you? I don't think you do anymore, because I don't anymore either. But did you ever get to the point where you have the walk away photo, but you think to yourself, like, this is too easy. I must be missing something. I'm going to play around with it for a good 90 minutes and then just reset it back to how it was and walk away.
Yeah, I took this photo and I got it maybe on the third or fourth try. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the lighting and what I wanted, and I could tell from the LCD that, okay, the background was exactly how kind of I envisioned it. I didn't have hot spots or anything. And then I proceeded to take 25 more photos, changing angles slightly, you know, changing the background exposure slightly, and just over and over again, just sort of saying nope, 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 and then going back and say, yeah, pretty sure I like the third one. So that's what happened here.
Am I in focus? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on. That's it. Yeah. So again, I'm not going to post this on the wall. This is nothing extraordinary. I don't shoot these kind of photos. And that was kind of part of it is my instinct is to just shoot a portrait and kind of move along. And I thought, no, I'm going to do something totally different. I'm going to shoot an inanimate object, and I'm going to focus on something in its attributes to kind of make it interesting. And so in this case, it was obviously the bright color and the circle on square, and that was it. So
I like the square peg in the round hole idea.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
And now I'm thinking of a very young Sarah Jessica Parker.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With some bad graphics, if I remember correctly.
You gotta give me more clues.
The TV show Square Pegs.
Oh, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I think it ran for half a season.
Right over my head.
Yeah. Well, she caught Ferris Bueller's eye.
Yeah.
So that worked out. All right. Let's have a look at mine. There's my boy playing some road hockey.
The end. All right. And why square for this one?
Because I normally wouldn't. Mm. Normally I would consider shooting this I composed this square in camera. And it obviously cropped because I don't, you know, I have a 3x2. The aspect ratio on my 5D Mark II, which this was, is 3x2, same as your DSLRs. That's not square.
Right.
But when I framed it up, I kept it completely in mind the fact that I would be finishing this in the square format. So this is on purpose. But normally I wouldn't do this. Normally I would just sort of consider either shooting this, you know, like a long portrait shot or something wider, like just or just a landscape 3x2. Both of them 3x2. It's because it's the way I see things because that's how I shoot mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But way back when, in the old days, you shoot like with an old, you know, Kodak Brownie or something, it was a square. And they look cool. Like you see those old photos that they, you know, in photo albums, the square photos, they look good. They don't need to be wide. They don't need to be tall. In fact, I kind of like those old photo albums, just the way that the pictures kind of fit together in the albums.
Right.
And so that's kind of what I had in mind. And also when I was shooting this, the lighting was kind of strange. It wasn't, it's still that sort of end of winter sort of lack of color light where it's just kind of blah.
Mm-hmm.
And him being backlit like this, it was just made it even worse. And so I knew that I wanted to shoot this in black and white. So I shot it black and white, shot it in square, and this is what we ended up with.
Why is his stick so, the blade so short?
The blade?
Oh, yeah. It's like 2/3 the length that the blade should be.
I don't know.
You got the stubby. You got the stubby stick.
Well, these are his indoor ones that mom brought outside.
Maybe somehow it's the angle playing kind of a mental trick on me, but mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's very short. But I think I noticed it in another picture where he was hitting a ball, and I thought, wow, they are really starting him off with a disadvantage.
Or an advantage.
Well, yeah, because once he gets a regular stick, he's gonna be like, wow, I've got like way more blade to work with.
Oh, here. His slap shot is just gonna be the hammer. Yeah. I don't know. I've never noticed it like in person, like just, you know, live in person in my hand. Yeah. I did buy these at the drugstore here in Germany for I think it was a set of two with a Cosm hockey puck and a ball. I think it was a grand total of €2 tax in.
Right, right.
So
probably not regulation for the CHL.
No, and I did cut the shaft of his down a little bit so that his because at the time he was quite a bit shorter. He's grown a bunch in the last couple months, so he might need to go with the longer one now. I'm pretty sure I can go dig some shekels out of the sofa cushions and get him a new set.
Okay,
that price, or next time I'm in Canada, I actually do want to bring him some proper sticks. I don't even know where to get them here. I've looked online on Amazon, and you can't really find anything that you want.
You can also get, now they're become super popular here, is like the full-on mini sticks, but not the mini sticks that we knew as kids. Like, okay. We're talking about the one-piece mini sticks that aren't plastic. They're made out of the same, whatever it is, graphite or whatever they're using nowadays to make the one-piece full regulation sticks, and they have the full curves on them. They're the same as the full size ones, but they're just mini ones for in the house, and they are awesome. Full flex. I'm gonna say $25.
Ooh,
yeah, Canadian. So that's like free if you're in the U.S.
Yeah. In the euros at that. Yeah, you get a stick, and they give you $5. It's pretty. Yeah. It's a good deal. So it's not like the ones you used to get like at the Canucks game or something.
No,
like
no, not at all. Not the little short plot. Like, they're much longer, and they are the real deal. I'm not sure what materials they're making these hockey sticks out of nowadays, but they're different.
The best part about those little mini sticks at the Canucks game would be, you know, out front of the P&E Coliseum after a game when, you know, a few guys have had way too many beers and start hitting each other, getting in street fights with them, and it turns into a melee.
right,
with those mini sticks. It's kind of awesome. And you're 8 years old asking, hey, Dad, what's that about? You know? Meanwhile, he just jumps in because, you know. No, he didn't. Yeah, so where we got off? We got off on a tangent about sticks.
Yeah, your photo is fine.
Oh, thanks. It's just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I'm not over the moon for it or anything. It's okay.
Well, the motto,
you've taken much better photos of your kid playing hockey already. I'll say that. Not my favorite one of the ones of your kid playing with his hockey stick.
This coming from Joe Lemon.
I'm not saying mine's good by any means. I'm just saying that in the last, 3 weeks, I've seen about 4 pictures of your kid with a hockey stick. This ranks 2nd. No, this is at least the 3rd.
How would you see another? No, in all honesty, I did post the one of my kid hitting a kickball.
And then there was one with him and your daughter, like in the middle of like a downtown street that you used on a podcast.
All right, that was a couple weeks before Christmas.
Yeah, and well, there's 3 of them, all that are him standing with a hockey stick. This ranks 3rd.
Oh, okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, my motto, though, is when life gives you short blades, you make lemonade.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I would get that on a t-shirt. Again, nothing wrong with this photo at all.
Yes.
In fact, I like it. It's just it's in my mind. It's all relative now because this is isn't as favorable as the other two. That's all I'm saying. Nothing wrong with it. It's okay. It's fine.
This is our challenge photo for episode 270, which means I think it's number 262 because it was 8 episodes we didn't do challenges. Right? First 8?
Sure.
No, I'm telling you. It was the first 8, so whatever that is, minus. So out of my 262 photo challenges, this is not top 10. I'm not ranking this up there. However, I happen to actually like what's going on here.
Okay.
Is it the fact that he's wearing one black glove and one pink glove? I don't know.
Okay.
That's nice. That was a nice. Well, he lost. Evidently, his sister lost one of her pink gloves, and my son lost one of his black gloves, and so...
See, I wish I could tell that.
Why it's black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's we're not anyways.
See, I would like that. That's a little treasure in this photo that I would like. Because no, but I mean I think you would like it too. And in 5 years from now, it's like, hey, that's funny. Like, you know, you've got the pink glove.
I have it in raw, so I can always go back to the color, but yeah. I'm choosing
Or just bring out that one color.
Oh no, we're not doing that anymore. Oh, I'm sorry. Is it 1999? Are we doing that still?
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Schindler's List. Not the most upsetting part of Schindler's List, by the way.
Okay.
This is one of those pictures that I think I will, even in black and white, I will like better in 2 years. I'll just kind of have a thing. Because I think this is his first time actually playing road hockey outside. Besides the setup photo for Christmas card, normally he plays in the basement. And so I think it's the first time outside, out in the front street. So,
okay.
And I like the backlighting. I purposely shot him against the sun just to kind of get this effect versus the other way. So, again, not my top 10. I'm not crying about it.
Okay.
There you go. This week's topic, I got an email or something. I just say email in terms of correspondence, because it could be carrier pigeon, it could be a text, it could be, I don't know, somebody tapping Morse code on my window. I don't know anymore.
Okay.
Because you get it from so many different angles now. Do you use Viber? I don't know.
No.
People do. I'm not one of them.
I don't know what that is.
I heard about it. I think it's like WhatsApp, which people were using for 3 years before I'd heard of it.
Okay.
So anyways, point is, I get stuff from everywhere. I'm just going to say email. So I got an email from a buddy of mine on the baseball team. It doesn't matter. I'm really going down a path. He's got a friend who's getting set to go on a safari in Africa in May.
Okay.
She wants to get a camera specifically for this, and the parameters that she dropped were it should not cost more than 500 euros.
Okay, all in, 500 bucks.
Yeah. It should zoom like crazy.
To infinity.
To infinity and beyond.
Okay.
And it doesn't need to have changeable lenses. Not required.
Would she prefer it to or prefer it not to?
That's unclear. I didn't really want to go down that rabbit hole.
Okay, let's just say prefer not to.
Probably. I mean, I would assume not to.
Just based on the fact she wants to zoom to infinity and she wants all in for $500. You're not going to get both.
And removable. No, you're not. But yeah. They do make some cameras. So I thought, you know, you and I could do a bunch of research and come up with, well, that was also my reaction. And come up with a few suggestions on what she could do. Or she could do it. Or she could just, you know, her Google is as good as mine.
Right.
Or I could ask somebody who knows about traveling light for photo stuff.
I like this. I like where this is going.
Okay. So I called your mom.
Okay.
just about something else. Nothing to do with that.
Okay. And then
after I was done talking to her for like 2 hours.
Yeah, she can go on for a little bit.
She likes to make casserole. So after that, I talked to our friend Chris Marquardt, Tips from the Top Floor, and said, "Hey, listen, what sort of things? I don't need a specific camera recommendation, but what are some things to consider when looking for a camera of this for this purpose?" And so, without further ado, here is that interview with Mr. Marquardt.
The mics are hot now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. No, I mean I'm recording.
I understand. That's lingo.
Yes. watch. What I'm trying to say is, watch your mouth.
Oh, I can't say.
You can say whatever you like.
Oh, it'll just be cut out. Okay, I'm not going to say anything.
I'm not going to cut it out. Okay, Chris Marquardt.
Hey,
welcome
how's
back.
Going?
Good. Yourself?
Oh, doing great.
Welcome back to the show. We had a question. It was actually not even a listener. It was a potential listener, I suppose. Somebody, a friend of a friend, had asked, "Hey, listen, wants to know about a certain camera or a certain or some or hey, what do you think about this?" And I said, "I know the guy to talk to."
Uh huh.
He was not available, and so I got in touch with Chris. No, you're the first guy that jumped into mind.
I stepped right into that trap.
Well. A friend of mine has a friend who's going on a safari and wants to buy a camera specifically for this event.
Yay!
And wants to know what to look for. And I said, you know what? I know a guy who travels a lot. You've been all over the world in the last couple of years, but more recently, an awful lot. True.
It's picking up a bit. Yeah, this is one of my goals. Actually, I found out over the years that this is one of my goals, to see the world, because it's amazing fun, and to photograph and to meet new cultures and to make friends all over the world. And I'm very lucky and very grateful that I seem to keep finding people who want to come with me.
So this wasn't one of your goals? You figured this out while you were traveling, that you wanted to travel?
I mean, I always loved to travel, but it was never to the point where I said, oh, I want to make travel my business, you know, I want to make this my living, because I never believed that this would be something, you know. And then over time, I realized, wait a minute, actually, it's not entirely travel. I do commercial photography, I do other things, but the travel part of it is just, at this point, I'm still finding enough people who want to come, sometimes surprisingly quickly, for example, with the Greenland thing that's coming up in August that I wasn't really expecting to do, but then I got a good opportunity and I told my listeners and then they jumped on it and pretty much this thing filled up. A Greenland, East Greenland tour on a ship filled up in... I don't know, a week maybe.
So it's full now.
It is mainly full. So no, I'm not trying to sell it because
so if you can't if you're listening now, you can't go.
But next year we're going to go to not to Greenland, but to Svalbard, to Spitsbergen, which is as high up north as you'll probably ever get.
Whenever I talk to you about these sorts of things and you say these places, I just pretend like I know what you're talking about.
It's if you look actually Spitsbergen, if you take a globe, mm-hmm. and you're trying to find it, it's best to tip it to the side so that you're looking onto the North Pole, that the North Pole is pointing right at you. Then it's the easiest to see.
Okay. That's next year.
That's next year. And this year, Greenland. Hmm.
So Mr. Travel. Traveling and taking pictures. So now the question that was put forth was my friend's friend wanted to go on a safari.
Yes.
She wants to get a camera for this.
Mm-hmm.
And the parameters are, it shouldn't cost more than 500 euros.
Mm-hmm.
It should have a good zoom because I guess she's not going to walk up to the lions. And the last parameter is it does not need to have a changeable lens.
And now she wants me to tell her, get the Panasonic such and such.
I hope not. Which
is what I can't do. This I have to say, the landscape of cameras is kind of humongous. There's so many cameras out there that would possibly fall into that range. But it's impossible for me personally and for most people to know the landscape and to really kind of be able to pinpoint that one camera. So I can't really be of help with being very specific, but I think we might be able to establish some parameters here that will make it easier for her to find the right camera.
Even if you were to point someone to a specific camera, there's no guarantee that that's the right camera for them.
No,
specifically.
And it comes down to things like ergonomics. Some people are, I mean, let's just take the big like Canon versus Nikon thing. DSLR shooters know that that's kind of a holy war there going on, mm-hmm. a religious war going on. But it's really like some people are more compatible with one kind, with one brand than the other. Just in the way that you use them, in the way that you handle them, in the way that the menus work, in the way that the buttons work.
Mm-hmm.
There's like these slight little differences that will sometimes make or break a camera for you. So you cannot get around going into a store and trying them out and just spending 5 minutes or 10 minutes with each of the cameras. They have them on display at, I don't know, Best Buy or whatever other camera places near you. And then you can play with them and just get a feel if they feel okay for you. I mean, that's kind of crucial with every camera you buy.
Oh, no question. So what are some of the considerations that you would look at for this sort of camera?
Well, first of all, I think you said she's going to do a safari.
Which I assume meant in Africa.
Well, that's a big question.
Unless it's a surfing safari.
What kind of safari is it? Will she drive in vehicles a lot? Or will she be on her own feet a lot, walk a lot? Are there hikes involved? Or is it more like stop the vehicle, get out of the vehicle, grab the camera from the seat next to you and just shoot some pictures, go back in the vehicle? Or is it like, okay, we're going to be hiking for 8 hours, getting up early in the morning and just go into the jungle? And that would probably kind of inform some of the decisions here. I mean,
I have no answers for you, but I'm going to assume.
Let's assume.
I'm assuming if she's suggesting she does not care about interchangeable lenses and doesn't want to spend more than 500 euros on a camera, it's probably going to be more of the touristy driving safari.
I assume
safari.
That, yeah. I assume that. So interchangeable lenses. One reason for the interchangeable lenses is, of course, if you want to squeeze out the last bit of quality of your photos, optical quality, you can adjust by using a lens of the specific focal range. Whereas if you have what we call a super zoom that zooms a very wide range from very telephoto to a very wide angle, then those are kind of they aren't bad, but they are, you know, if you try to be everything, you can't be good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
So these lenses are a bit more of a compromise, but they will have one big advantage, of course, and that is if it's not an interchangeable lens, it's much more much less likely that you get dirt in your camera or dust on your sensor, things like that, because you, that's where the dust usually comes in. You can't fully avoid it, but that's one of the things that will kind of keeps your camera clean. And if it's a safari in the desert somewhere with lots of sand and stuff in there, that might be actually a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. Let's assume we're going to go with one of the super zooms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so assuming that, what are some other considerations that that you're going to want to look for?
Well, if it's a safari, there is probably a chance for wildlife. And wildlife has a maximum distance that will allow you to come close. Mm-hmm. And depending on the kind of wildlife, that can be quite far away. So you will you'll be looking for a good telephoto range. The wide angle is probably not as important as the telephoto range. So unfortunately, I can't give you exact numbers here, because in photography, in optics, the focal length, that's hard to explain. The focal length will have different magnification depending on the size of the sensor that's in mm-hmm. the camera. So if you have a full frame camera, like a 35 millimeter full frame DSLR, and you have a 50 millimeter on that, that will be what we call normal, somewhere in the middle. But if you put that same 50 millimeter on a camera with a Micro Four Thirds sensor, that is now all of it, that will all of a sudden behave like it was a 100 millimeter telephoto right. lens. So the smaller the sensor, the more telephoto you will get out of it. Now, interestingly enough, if you look at these super zooms, if these still there's, I think they're still around, the bridge cameras mm-hmm. where, that are kind of in between the compacts and the DSLRs or system cameras, interchangeable lens cameras. Some of them don't have huge, big sensors, which means that they should typically be quite good in the telephoto range, because the smaller sensors kind of facilitate that.
Some of the ones I took a quick look at were talking around the, now take this for whatever it means, the 50 times zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, if your wide angle is, you know, 1,000 millimeters, then 50 times is really telephoto. But yes. It's not going to start out there. You're going to start out at something like, I'm not even sure what they do, because it's like you said, it's the equivalent. They'll give the focal length and then the 35 millimeter or 35 full frame equivalent.
They will give you whatever is the equivalent compared to full frame. So mm-hmm. Focal length isn't really very meaningful here. Maybe for marketing purposes, it's more the angle of view that's important, because that's where you can compare things much better. So a wide angle of view is a wide angle, and a very narrow angle of view is a telephoto. But looking at the X factor, the 50x, 20x, 30x, 100x zoom pretty much only means that you take the widest the lens can go, mm-hmm. the shortest focal length, let's say, I don't know, it starts at an equivalent of 28, and then you multiply it with whatever the factor is, and that's the longest you can shoot the lens at. And so a 28 with a, or lens that begins at 28 with a 50x factor is going to be, like on the long end, is going to be a 1400, which is quite long.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to get you in close to those lines.
Oh, yes, easily. Now, small sensors have a bit... have one issue, and that is the smaller the sensor, the smaller the pixels on the sensor, and that might manifest itself in more noise.
Mm-hmm.
But that typically only applies if you go very low light. If you try to shoot lions in dusk, which you will have a hard time doing with this kind of a camera without it getting all noisy or grainy.
Right.
But during daytime, hey, not a problem.
Now, 50 times, that's the optical zoom. What about the digital add-on?
Well, the digital zoom is... I don't advise using it, because it is more of an artificial, like blowing up pixels, making them bigger. It's like the camera's inventing new pixels. It's not...
Well,
really...
is it not the equivalent of taking your image into Photoshop later and simply... blowing it up?
Not 100%. That's the thing, because the camera knows what the sensor structure is like.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the manufacturers actually kind of take that into account when blowing up the pixels to simulate more pixels. And sometimes this way you can actually get slightly better results. I emphasize slightly
right.
better results in camera with digital zoom than you would get on your computer. But I'd say most professionals, when you put them to the task, they will probably be able to get the same quality out on the computer.
When was the last time you printed out a photo you took with a digital zoom? Exactly. Okay.
Never.
Answered.
No, I don't really like digital zoom. Sometimes it'll be helpful in a pinch, but it's never for me. I never use it for pictures that I actually want to like hang up on a wall.
You know who does like digital zoom is Lauren at Best Buy, because that helps him move units.
Yes.
Your grandma will buy it. 300 times digital zoom. That sounds awesome.
No, the optical zoom is the one that counts.
Yes. So look for something. I mean, if you want the super zoom, I get the impression that 50 times is kind of the sweet spot for these cameras. You're not going to put this up against your you know 5D Mark III or something with a 200 millimeter prime lens. Quality wise, it's not going to look the same, but you're going to get good results, likely. Yeah.
And you know the camera. I mean, the problem is that a lot of people kind of seem to rely on the camera doing everything for them, mm-hmm. which of course if you look at what the camera actually does for us, it's not a lot. It the camera will try to get the exposure right so that the picture isn't all black or all whites, but you can actually see something on the picture. The camera is trying to get the focus right, and the camera is trying to get the colors right. That's the three things the camera does for us. That's all it does for us. But it does not do the things that actually really count for the picture, and that's stuff like do a nice image composition, mm-hmm. or be out to shoot at the right time of day, which I can't overemphasize enough, is just kind of the most important part of the photography, especially on things like a safari. It won't make sure that there's not something weird sticking out in the background. Like if you're on a safari, you want to shoot that lion, you don't want the lion to sit in front of a bush that like peeks its branches out of the lion's ears in your photo, you know?
Right.
It's just going to look weird. So these are the kind of the timing. When do you take the picture is crucial for some of these things. You want the lion to look or to do something and not to, I don't know, have its eyes closed and yawn at this point. Maybe you want that, but you know, you are the one who has to decide all these things. And the camera only does a few technical details for us. You have to be out at the right time because the light is crucial on a safari. We were in Ethiopia in January and out in the desert, and it wasn't quite a safari, but you know, there were camels and salt lakes, and it's amazing scenery there. Especially when you have camels like reflecting in the water that's on the salt lake. It's like, looks like an ice landscape, you know, it looks like Iceland, mm-hmm. but it isn't. It's hot. It's amazing. And, in order to get those, to look really cool, we had to be out when the sun came up. We had to be out at sunrise, which was in Ethiopia is around 6 o'clock. So I'm not an early bird. I'm not. But for this, we as a group decided in the beginning to make sure we use the morning sun, and we kind of flipped around our day-night patterns a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was difficult for a day, and second day it was just fine, especially as there is nothing going on in the evenings in Ethiopia. So it's easy to get to bed early, and there's not much internet to keep you distracted. So it was fairly easy to do, but that gave us twice the golden hour a day, once in the morning, once in the evening, as opposed to sleeping in and then just missing 50% of the amazing light that you could have.
So I'm assuming that this safari sounds like it's going to be sort of a planned thing, probably a group thing. So they'll be going along at certain times.
Do you know if it's a photo specific safari or if it's just a safari?
I know nothing.
Okay, because, I mean, there are these two different approaches. Mm-hmm. The one is, it's a safari. Yeah, we'll get up at 8. We'll have a nice breakfast, and then we get out. And out in the vehicles at 10 o'clock, and then that's when the light is probably already not so nice. The higher the sun is up in the sky, it's the more difficult it will be to shoot in these kind of places.
So what I'm assuming is that the goal here is somebody who wants to get really nice snapshots. That's my guess based on this, because if you're going to, first of all, if you're going to go on one of these safaris to get some, you know, pictures that you can sell.
You're not going with a 500 euro camera. No,
you're not.
You are probably going to have a few lenses that are just the lenses worth three times that.
Probably multiple bodies.
Yes. So it's a different approach, of course. It's a very different approach, but you know, still, even if you go out there, then at least catch the evening sun. The sun, like the last hour before sunset, where the sun is low, where the light is warm, where you get beautiful textures and shadows, and the whole quality of the pictures will change. Unfortunately, with a lot of events and things, that's the time when people are in for dinner. So
right.
we actually... almost every time we make a point to be out and then move dinner time around that somehow, plan around it, maybe sometimes even have like a lunch bag with us. But make sure you are there when the light is good. I think that is really the best photo tip. And then it doesn't really matter what camera you use. Every camera, even the one in your smartphone, will take amazing pictures when the light is amazing.
Yes. Now, I've never been to Africa. But I'm just going to go ahead and assume that there's three power outlets for the whole continent and everybody shares them.
That's no, that's wrong. So okay. You, first of all, if you say Africa, you're talking about the biggest continent here, or the continent that is so underrepresented on today's maps. I've just recently seen this map where you see Africa as in its real size, and then you see a whole lot of other countries and continents kind of fit, how they fit inside Africa. And you can fit North America and all of Europe and South America and a lot of those continents easily within Africa. Africa is huge. So Africa is not just like this one country. It's amazingly big. It's amazingly diverse, so many different cultures. And depending on where you go, you will find really Western standards and things. You will also find lots of third world countries there where you have that situation where there's not a good outlet situation. So without really knowing where she's going, I would say probably take a few more batteries than you think you'll need, like get a couple of extra batteries.
Okay, so when buying these cameras, though, I don't know in terms of the bridge cameras, whether they make versions that will take, say, AA batteries. But I know
unlikely.
A lot of unlikely. So it's probably a dedicated, say, Nikon or a Panasonic or whichever company, they'll make a dedicated battery most likely.
That's what I would expect, yes.
Okay.
So get a couple of more batteries. Have them charged, like charge them whenever you can. That's what I do. I will come back to a lodge or a hotel, and I'll the first thing before I even sometimes take off my jacket, I'll plug in the charger. I'll charge stuff up just to make sure I don't forget doing that. Because then on some of the tours we do, you might not have power for like 3 days in a row.
And if you're moving around, like if you're moving, like say you're staying one night here, one night, you know, I guess you know what moving around means. And you're gonna charge your batteries. Here's my tip. Here's what I do when I work on every professional shoot. I just did this in Italy the other day when we were at Ferrari. I went and plugged some batteries in while we were shooting. And I put my car keys on top of that battery charger.
Hard to forget, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere without, and that's because I have left battery chargers and batteries behind more than once. It happens when when you get all packed up and you're racing around and you're trying to, you know, put all the lights away and the sound equipment, it's very easy to forget that charger and battery, and that's that. So in Africa, on safari, you're probably not going to leave your car keys, but leave something that you are going to miss on your way out the door.
Your glasses.
Then you'll never find the charger. But yeah, something like that.
You know, another thing that I have started doing is I bring a car-based converter. So you a little box that you plug into the 12-volt outlet in the car, and that generates mains voltage. So you can charge your laptop and charge your batteries there. I just brought one. I bought this for 26 euros, and it worked like a charm, and it managed to charge several people's batteries. I brought a little power strip. Mm-hmm. And we just, everyone in the car, we were driving for 3 hours, you know. So what do you do in 3 hours? Well, let's charge batteries. The car is making power anyway. So let's use that electricity and charge some batteries. And we arrived all with charged batteries. So you can make use of those times.
Yes.
Definitely.
So battery life is an issue. I think generally, from what I understand, we're at a great time. I mean, it's obviously going to get better. It always does. But we're at a great time for number of photos per battery. The battery life in most cameras is pretty amazing.
It depends a bit nowadays. DSLRs, yes, absolutely. 500, 600, 700, 800 shots on a battery is definitely possible with most DSLRs these days. If you look at the smaller Micro Four Thirds cameras, mirrorless but interchangeable lens cameras, they rely more on the display to do your composition, less on a viewfinder.
Right.
So they will use a lot more power. So you will need more batteries for those, definitely.
Because they're always on. What I've noticed is there seems to be a massive shift. Yeah. At first it was, you know, you had the LCD screen, and then you had the option. You could do essentially live view or EVF or whatever you wanted, or you could have the optical.
Right.
But more and more cameras are just ditching the optical altogether. Right.
And they are thirsty. They want battery badly, and they need it. So that's another reason. Familiarize yourself with your camera. I think that's really the most important thing. You have to know how thirsty your camera is. So don't buy that camera a week before you go on safari. That's the worst thing you can do, because then you will run into all those issues in a place where you can't just quickly go and buy another battery.
So I get the impression that a lot of these rely on the LCD screen versus an actual EVF.
An EVF is a little LCD screen inside the camera that you look at through an eyepiece, but it's smaller, doesn't take as much energy. So EVFs are better than the big LCDs on the back of the cameras in terms of power consumption.
But if let's say you're relying on the back of the screen, the LCD, do you spring the extra couple dollars for the articulating screen?
I have always used DSLRs, and when I use LiveView, which I do, then I never missed an articulating screen, but I really never used one. So I have heard of people who are really happy with these articulating screens, because then you can get low and shoot from a very low perspective without having to lie in the mud. Mm-hmm. You can also do candid shots better. Like if you flip the display up and you look down at the camera while composing the shot, people are not as people will probably assume that you're checking something on your camera as opposed to taking a picture of them. So you get better candid shots this way. So if it's on there, sure, get it.
When they first started showing up, the articulated screens, I sort of somewhat snobbishly just assumed that they were for soccer moms. Yeah.
Yeah. But they aren't. I mean, they're quite good. Huh?
There are times when I'm shooting a video with my 5D Mark II that I really would like an articulating screen, where I just can't get down there to get focus or whatever.
Or you want to shoot overhead. You have the camera at your outstretched arm above your head, and it's hard to see the display this way. Yeah.
Yes. Especially when I'm shooting for TMZ and, getting that paparazzi stuff. That's the tough angles.
But I think one thing we haven't touched on yet, which I think is also very important, is the memory cards.
Yes.
The memory cards are, let's put it this way, you will need more than you thought you would on a safari. Because you will see so many new things. You want to shoot a lot. Especially if it's wildlife, if it's living things, you will shoot lots, because that one shot of the lion will change its expression. It'll do things. You'll probably easily end up on a day having taken 200-400 pictures.
Okay, so what do you recommend? I mean, I'm assuming that most of these are going to take
SD cards,
some version of those. Yes. What sort of size would you be looking at?
Well,
eggs in one basket?
I used to be of the conviction that you shouldn't use big SD cards or big flash cards in general because, yeah, too many eggs in a basket. If you have this 128 gigabyte card and it'll fail, then you're pretty much screwed and you might lose all the pictures. I'm somewhere in the middle at this point. So if you get like a couple of 16 gigabyte cards, 32 gigabyte cards, should be fine. You gotta take a few precautions though. One is you have to format the cards inside the camera. So the camera knows best how it wants to write the things on the card. And take that card, don't format it on your computer. Formatting is a kind of essential process to get the card ready to receive pictures. And do it in the camera. That's one thing. The other thing is, I know, for example, that some of the Canon DSLRs, if you switch it off and you take the memory card out, you can introduce what's called corruption. You can damage things on the card because the cameras sometimes keep writing to the card and fixing things after you switch them off. The off switch on the cameras is not like a physical off switch. It's more like a suggestion to the camera. Telling the camera, okay, you've been switched off. Now finish up whatever you have to finish up, but be quick.
Right.
That's pretty much what the off switch tells the camera. The camera does its thing, and that might include writing things to the card. So I have this, I call it the 3-second rule. You switch off the camera, you want to take the card out because, I don't know, you want to put it in a card reader to look at those pictures on a computer. Just switch it off, give it 3 seconds, and then take the card out. And that will, since I've done this, even if it might be a bit voodoo, but since I've done this religiously, I've never had a corrupted card again.
Yeah, I think I've had one or two images that were corrupted over, you know, 100,000 images I've taken.
I would also suggest not going too cheap on the cards. There are like no-name cards for amazing prices.
Right.
I'm not a fan of those. I had actually failed some of those. I've been with the slightly higher price. Cards aren't that expensive anymore. I've been with the slightly higher priced cards. We're talking SanDisk. We're talking Transcend. Some of those bigger brands seem to have a better quality. This might be voodoo, but my personal experience, this is anecdotal evidence, but my personal experience has shown that I never had problems with the cards of these brands.
For me, it's the sushi principle. If it's all you can eat for $3, you don't want it.
Yeah, it's true. By the way, cards, another thing, treat cards like film. As in, if you're out there, yeah, have enough cards with you so you don't have to reuse them while you travel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just do a rough estimate of how many pictures you're going to take, double that, and then take enough cards that double estimate will easily fit on them.
Well, one of these 16, like I think the bridge cameras tend to run around the 16 megapixels range. You're looking at JPEG. You're going to shoot JPEG if you're shooting what we're talking about.
If it's more on the snapshot side, yeah, definitely JPEG.
So on a 32 gig card with the...
Oh, you won't fill it up.
No. So I don't think... I mean, how many images could you expect? 16 megapixel camera, writing JPEG, I think you're going to expect those images to be around 2 megabytes in size?
Probably, yeah.
Maybe 3, depending on the quality.
So that's 16... gigabytes on a card,
mm-hmm,
divided by 2 megabytes. How much is that in giga? Okay, I can't
80,
even.
80
We're talking
photos.
Thousands of pictures.
Oh, thousands. Yeah, decimal place in the wrong place.
Easily thousands of pictures.
Yeah, so you're you know, say you snap 500 a day, you're going for a week, that's 3,500 pictures, you're going to be fine on
but
a 16.
Bring a spare card for sure,
mm-hmm.
just in case something happens. I mean, you never know. The card is probably good and fine and everything, but just imagine that because some weird cosmic ray hits your camera, you end up with a corrupted bit on the camera and on the card, and it says, I can't write to this card anymore. It's corrupted. And you're somewhere out on safari. Yes, you want to have a spare card.
Yes.
For sure. They aren't that expensive anymore. I mean, we're looking 16 gigabyte SD cards they start at like $10.
Yeah.
So get an extra just to be on the safe side.
Do it. Now, if you're out there shooting, you're going to want to shoot multiple photos in bursts.
With wildlife, definitely. You set the camera to its fastest rapid fire speed, and then the moment the lion gets up and stretches or whatever after its nap, you want to fire. You want to shoot, bang, 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 just to get a good position or get a good expression. And yeah.
So what would you consider to be a reasonable range for snapshot photographer? What's the fastest you'd need for burst mode?
There is a very wide range on today's cameras. We're talking the big DSLRs starting at some 3-4 frames a second up to Micro Four Thirds and mirrorless cameras that use an electronic shutter and that do like, I don't know, hundreds of frames a second. You will see most professional photographers with like the big DSLRs shooting in the 10 to 12 to 15 frames a second range, and they shoot bursts. It's like a battlefield sometimes when you are at these hot spots where lots of those are, and something moves and they go, and 20 of them at the same time. being in the middle of that is a really weird experience. But if you have anything between, I would say, 5 and 10 frames a second is going to be just fine.
My heart's telling me 6 is the sweet spot. Like if you have 6 frames per second and you're a snapshot photographer, you're golden.
Oh yeah, perfect.
I mean,
perfect.
Think back to when, you know, you were shooting snapshots with your, you know, point and shoot film camera. You had burst modes of 1.
And you know, I'm not saying, okay, this line is moving now, keep your finger on the shutter until the card is full. Don't shoot like 500 pictures of this one line, but do a few bursts, 5-6 pictures in a row, and then later make a choice. But make sure to delete the ones that you don't like. Otherwise, you end up with a whole lot of stuff on your cards and on your hard drive that you'll probably never look at again. Oh, there's this lion. Oh, there's this lion a tenth of a second later. Oh, there's the same lion another tenth of a second later. Oh, look, he's opened his left eye just a slight little bit more. I mean, this is not going to be interesting for anyone but you.
I have those, not even for you. I have the same photos of my kid, and yes. They're not that interesting to me.
You have to learn to edit.
Well, that's a whole different show. But you're shooting snapshots with the super zoom. How do I put this without answering the question for you? What's a major concern when you're shooting at 1400 millimeters from a moving vehicle?
camera shake.
When,
of course.
Because
the longer the lens, the worse the camera shake.
There you go.
That's just a fact. You will have if you just imagine you're trying to flick a light switch with a 10-foot pole or a 10-foot stick. So the slightest movement of your hand is going to make that end of the pole sway quite a bit, so you can't hit that light switch easily.
Right.
That's the telephoto. That's exactly what you're doing when you do telephoto.
How do camera companies help combat this? Besides making us better shooters, what do they do?
As if you didn't know. Well, the image stabilization, of course. There's stuff in the camera or in the lens, but usually in the camera with these cameras that I actually don't know how they do it. Probably in the lens. That doesn't matter really. it's a way to kind of counter the motion. So there are like maybe lenses in there that move, or some cameras will move the sensor to counter. They measure the motion of the camera and they counter actuate the different parts to make sure that the picture doesn't get too much shake. And
they work pretty well.
And they do work quite well. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, shooting from a moving vehicle that's driving through like over an off-road environment, which is quite bumpy, and then there's a lion moving on the horizon far away.
Okay, you're adding too many variables, but
yes, but that's possible, you know.
Yes,
but you won't actually have a good. You won't get shake-free pictures of that unless you have like the best of the best of the best equipment.
No, but in general,
the quietest hand. But in general, the image stabilization in these cameras is decent. Just don't expect them to do miracles.
But. And I would suggest they'll probably be in every Super Zoom camera.
Yes, I think that's a given. Yeah. And there might be slight differences how good they are, but I.
That's some research you're going to have to do on your own.
That's a lot of research. I didn't do that research.
My other concerns, like, you know, one of my dreams is whenever I go anywhere, even if I'm just, you know, going out for the day trip with my kids, is to have the most portable camera setup there is. Now, I don't always have that. I, you know, have an SLR or DSLR, and, you know, usually don't bring extra lenses, but it still gets kind of cumbersome. So ideally, on a safari, you're going to want to enjoy yourself and not spend the whole time hauling your camera gear around and watching it at every second to make sure somebody doesn't walk off with it. How big of a deal is portability and weight and whatnot?
You know, you have a bit of a conflict here between three variables: small, cheap, and good.
Mm-hmm.
Choose two. You can either have a small and cheap camera that's not as good, or you can have a small and good camera, but it's not going to be cheap, or you can have a cheap and good camera, but then it's going to be big.
Right.
So it really is between those three. So getting the smallest possible camera, the camera will suffer in another area, maybe in the quality of the lens or the quality of the image stabilization and things like that. So I personally don't mind the cameras to be a bit bigger, but then I end up with better quality, better build quality, better image quality usually. But I think it's your choice. I mean, you can have a very small camera. I mean, there are very small cameras like the, well, they're not very small, but they're also not huge. The Sony A7s, professional full-frame mirrorless cameras, but they are not cheap, you know?
Right.
So it really comes down to balancing these three elements, and that totally comes down to your preference when it comes to what are you willing to carry with you, what are you willing to.
And
to
if you're spending a lot of your time in the van,
a bigger camera might be just thing. You
might
know?
Be just fine. Yeah, you're not going to be worried about hauling it around. But if you have to hike, you know, 6 days across the savannah, which you're probably not doing.
Well, there might be a day of hiking in there. I mean, well, that's one of the things we did in Ethiopia. We had a lot of driving from place to place. And then stopping at the side of the road. I mean, as we were all photographers, it was gonna. We agreed right in the beginning that whenever someone sees something that's amazing, shout out, stop the cars, let's get out. And if it's only 5 minutes, but hey, we have to take this. The light is perfect. It looks beautiful. Why not just stop on the side of the road and spend a few minutes here? And then we had this two-day thing where we were hiking most of the time. So during the driving and stopping and going to destinations, keeping the camera in the car was just fine. I mean, I had the open camera backpack pretty much sitting there on the seat next to me, so I could take cameras in and out and change lenses and the stuff that you do. And for the hike, I typically have like a day pack, like a little very lightweight backpack, and I only take on the hike what I really need to take, like one camera, one lens, a spare battery and a spare card, and then just make do with that. And it's going to be, most of the time, I'm going to have it in my hand, because when I hike and it's slightly exhausting and I see something that I want to shoot, I don't have the energy and time to just, okay, let me take that backpack off. Let me take the camera bag out. Let me open the camera bag. Let me take the camera out of that. Let me switch on the camera. Let me take the lens cap off. And, you know, it's like 5 minutes later, you're finally ready to take the picture.
It's funny how quickly your attitude goes from, that's a great photo, to, nah.
Nah, it's not important enough, you know?
Get it.
Yeah. And having your camera with you around your, either like on a hip thing, like a, what's it called? Spider holster.
Okay.
For example, you can hook this up to your hip. Or what I tend to do is with the longer hikes, like when we do a Himalayan tour, for example, I will clip it to the shoulder straps of the backpack. So the camera sits in front of me. It is in front of me.
Okay.
It's hanging off. I don't want cameras to hang around my neck, because that puts strain on my neck and I don't like that. So I'm not a fan of these normal camera straps. But there's, for example, Optech USA has a system that you can have like two pieces going on your camera left and right, and then two opposite pieces going onto your backpack shoulder straps, and they click into each other.
Okay.
So you can take the camera off and you can have it hanging there. And this way, I never missed a photo. The camera is always ready. When I hike, I typically don't even put a lens cap on, because that's already in the way between me and the photo. I even ditched the hiking poles, because, hey, you have two hands, you have two hiking poles. You want to take a picture? What going to do? What are you going to do?
They might kick you out of Germany for that, though.
I don't care.
I see people walking around the Etika with the hiking poles.
Well, that's older people that don't want to use a cane, you know.
I may have just regionalized that joke by saying Etika.
Etika? Whoever knows.
Yeah, I don't know. Aldi?
Outside of Germany.
Trader Sam's?
Trader Joe's?
No. Sam's Club? Something? Now, real quick, to end this off, there's a lot of info here, but there's a couple of the features that I don't know if they're features, I don't know if they're gimmicks, but there's a few things that I'm just going to run through really quickly. You tell me yes or no. Are they important to Chris Marquardt? Okay.
No.
A lot of the features, that are built into these cameras, how important is having Wi-Fi built in?
Helpful, not essential, but definitely helpful. Will eat battery. So make sure it's, especially if you're out in the desert, that you can switch it off.
Right. See, Wi-Fi is something I don't really care about. Maybe once I started using it and thought, oh, wow, this is...
I wish my cameras had Wi-Fi, because shooting with an iPhone and being able to just send it off is amazing.
Okay, so. Fair enough. That's a whole different, another argument.
Different argument, yeah.
That's something else. I've gone a lifestyle change myself, but face detection.
Helpful, because it helps getting focus right with people in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because people in the picture, you want their faces in focus 99% of the time, unless you want to do an artsy shot of some sort.
Right.
But very helpful.
I've never used it, but I bet you it's pretty awesome.
It's helpful.
Okay. GPS.
I like GPS. Again, from the iPhone, you know, having pictures geotagged, amazing. Sometimes have like my DSLRs don't have GPS, so sometimes I have in my iPhone, I have a geotagger run parallel to it that tags the time and the location, and then later on I kind of marry that to the pictures, which also have a timestamp. I like to be able to go into a map and see where I took a picture. If it has GPS, it's even more helpful if it also has a compass. Because that will then not only show you where you took a picture, but which direction the camera is pointing.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So compass is helpful. So that stuff is helpful. Again, not essential, but later on, if you want to retrace your steps, most software now can do that. If you're in Lightroom, you can show your pictures on a map. Many services let you do that, and it's pretty cool. It's also a bit of a privacy concern if you don't want people to know where you live, you switch it off at home. But
it's 2016. Good luck.
True.
Everybody knows everything. get past that. Yeah, for me, GPS not really a thing, but I hadn't really used it, but so it's not really on my radar.
Since my travel activities picked up a lot more, I'm more and more happy to have geotag pictures.
Great. And at the end of the day, though, the one thing you want to check, all these things are great. How's the picture quality? That's the one thing you want to check. Do you like the picture quality of the camera you bought?
And you can decide that based on your gut feel. Yes. I mean, don't go out. And I don't like these reviews with like stars in big magazines and things. Those are often, I mean, you
paid
know,
it's for, a, just say paid for.
It yes, it says something if you see like, oh, the winner of this thing is camera X, and then two pages later you see a big ad for camera X.
Right.
It is pretty much a given that there was some influence of some sort.
Great.
Even if it's not official, even if it's just like, okay, even if the writer of the report just knows that, oh, they are an advertiser, I might treat them nicer than, well, you know how people work.
I know how it goes. Great. I think that's a lot to go on. I think we're going to, Adam and I will probably go and see if we can point them in at least the direction of where to look in terms of super zooms, bridge cameras, based on all that info.
Well, good luck.
It's muddy waters. Chris, thanks for being on the show. Where can people find you online?
Best place these days is discoverthetopfloor.com.
We'll put a link to that.
That's where I sell things.
That's where you sell things.
So if anyone wants to come on a safari in the ice or in the desert or just a regular photo workshop or something that is not an extreme sports kind of thing, then you might be able to find something there. Maybe.
Check it out. Chris, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
And good luck with your travels and talk to you soon.
Thank you.
And we're back.
Wow.
You listened to all 45 minutes of that, didn't you?
I just can't believe how much good information there was.
There was a lot of good information. Now, with that, I did say I would come up with a specific recommendation for a camera. With one caveat.
Okay.
This is, I am not recommending this camera. I'm recommending you start with this camera, have a look at it, and then look at the other cameras in its category. So if you go online and you go and look at this camera, it'll say, you know, like user or customers also bought this or also looked at these other cameras. And you can find a bunch of cameras in this price range, in this league, and then you have to go to your Best Buy or your Saturn or MediaMarkt or wherever you are, you know, you are buying this and kind of feel it yourself. You have, like, each camera, every camera is not made for every person.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like it. So my recommendation for a Super Zoom bridge camera, did you know what a bridge camera is?
No.
I didn't know either. It's kind of the bridge between point and shoot and DSLRs. So it's okay. Kind of got the like the big zoom. It's more of a little bigger camera. It's not quite the tiny point and shoot. So it just acts as a bridge between those two.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of where you're going to be looking. So I would start looking at the Nikon Coolpix P610.
Okay.
Retails for in the neighborhood of the mid $300. I don't know what that translates into euros, but definitely going to be under 500 euros. It's got a 60x zoom, which is quite long. Does all the things that Chris and I just spoke about. So that's where I would start. Check out the Panasonic version that Panasonic makes. Check out the Canon version. Check out Fuji. Whoever else makes one, have a look. But that's where to start.
Okay.
Challenge for next week, Adam.
Yes.
Please say clamshell because I've already shot it.
Okay, clamshell.
I might have told you butterfly lighting though, didn't I?
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing, isn't it?
Sure.
Okay. Either way, buttershell lighting for next week.
Okay.
Sounds better than clamfly.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So let's do that. Websites, Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca, but you will not find the picture of my beautiful lemon.
I think that should be your homepage.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I was going to draw little eyes and a smiley face on it. Or I was going to put a tagline on it, like sour is the new sweet or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Glad you didn't.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Check out my stuff at alnatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links, photos, and everything that we just talked about. That's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.